ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Just 40 years ago, racism was legal in South Africa.
You were a non-person. You were non-white.
I'm Sisonke Msimang. My dad was a freedom fighter against apartheid, and I grew up as part of a global movement to end that injustice. But I don't know much about what Australians did. So join me as I meet the Aussies who took a stand and helped change world history. ABC Rewind Boycott. Search for ABC Rewind on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Late Night Live, coming to you from Gadigal Land. I'm David Marr, and this is Pauline Hanson.
I and most Australians want our immigration policy radically reviewed and that of multiculturalism abolished.
Yeah, yeah.
I believe we are in danger of being swamped by Asians.
Pauline Hanson, 30 years ago, announcing her arrival on the stage with a blast of race hate we hadn't heard in Canberra for 20 or 30 years. Disbelief and horror made her briefly the most famous Australian in the world. She lasted in Parliament only a couple of years, but I'd argue she changed Australian politics by that time. After a decade in the wilderness, dancing with the stars and fighting like hell to return, she managed to get back, this time into the Senate under Malcolm Turnbull in 2016. Most of the time since then, she's worked the political fringes, but in the last 6 months, Pauline Hanson has become, if the polls can be trusted, a force that must be reckoned with. Blacks and Asians are no longer her target.
They hate Westerners, and that's what it's all about. You know, you say, oh, well, there's good Muslims out there. Well, I'm sorry. How can you tell me there are good Muslims?
To talk Pauline, I'm joined by two journalists who, like me, go all the way back to the lady's 1996 debut. Paul Kelly, editor-at-large for The Australian. In early July, he'll be publishing his next book, The Twilight of Exceptionalism, The Liberal and Conservative Era, 2013 to 2022. Also with us, Nikki Sava, journalist, author, and at one time, advisor to the Treasurer, Peter Costello. Her latest book is called Earthquake, The Election That Shook Australia. We'll also be hearing occasionally from election analyst Anthony Green and a mystery guest who you will all know. Welcome to you lot.
Thank you.
Our first question, who is she? Has she grown, changed, learned anything much in her long career, Paul?
I think she's essentially the same, David. I mean, she's still running a racist agenda. The target is not so much Asians, it's now Muslims. But I think her appeal has changed. So a lot's really changed in the last 30 years. And clearly, if we look at the polls, we can see that she's gone from being a fringe operator, or slightly more than a fringe operator for a while in 1998, to being a very substantial presence at the moment in terms of our politics, polling above 20%, ahead of the Liberal Party in a lot of polls. So clearly she is part of the crisis within the centre-right and part of the broader crisis of Australian politics. And the appeal she now makes to the Australian people is much more broadly based than it was 30 years ago.
Nikki.
Well, I agree with most of what Paul said. In my opinion, she hasn't really changed at all. And, you know, she has moved from Indigenous people to Asians to every migrant and now specifically to Muslim people. But her message is still the same, and that is Australia is under threat from people who are different from the white folk who settled here.
Nikki, what do you think of this, that since her arrival, since 1996, 30 years ago, a big question in Australian politics, some might say the big question in Australian politics, is, do you fight this woman head on or do you pinch her policies?
I believe the best course is to fight her head on. But unfortunately, what has been happening in recent times is that political leaders have been appropriating her policies. They have made themselves, particularly the Liberal Party, One Nation light. Now, no one, you know, is prepared at this stage to go as far as Hanson in the Liberal Party, although there are those who think that the time will come for a merger. But instead of challenging her, you don't have to attack her, but you have to challenge what she says and what she stands for and explain to people why this is not the way forward for Australia, that if you follow the path or the course that she espouses, it will be disaster for Australia. And I think the Liberal Party today is grappling with this issue, and I think they don't have either the courage or the judgment to know that the best way for them to reconstitute and to resurrect themselves is by pointing out where she is wrong and why she is wrong, and then sending a very strong signal to people, both politically and morally, that she should be last on their ballot paper.
So, Paul, what do you reckon? Challenge her head on, filch her policies, some combination of the two?
Look, I think at the present time the situation is complicated because there's an internal crisis within the coalition, there's an internal crisis within the right of Australian politics about how conservative it should get, about how progressive it should be. And in this sense, of course, the party is trapped between the Teals on the one hand and support for One Nation on the other. So this is not just an issue about One Nation. It's not just an issue about how the Liberals and the Nationals deal with One Nation. It's about how they resolve this internal crisis, this existential crisis about what they actually stand for. I guess what I'd say about it is I think that what the party has got to do, and I think under Angus Taylor and Matt Canavan they'll move more in this direction, what I think it's got to do is, first of all, differentiate itself from Hanson. This is enormously important. So highlight the differences between the coalition on the one hand and Hanson on the other. And I think what they've got to do is avoid personal attacks on Hanson, stress that she has no answers for any of the challenges that Australia faces, that she is a policy vacuum, and also highlight the fact that she's a really divisive figure, that she damages the country and she divides the country. So I think those broad set of approaches, if you like, a nuanced approach, is what is certainly required from the coalition, from the Liberals and the Nationals. They need to get this right, because if they don't get this right, they're going to be in diabolical trouble.
I put the question to Anthony Green, election analyst, you know, why can't she just be bluntly condemned by decent politicians in this country as a racist? And this was his response.
They avoid calling Pauline Hanson racist out of concern that the people who support her think they're calling them racist. I think one of the greatest difficulties in public debate often is with average members of the public just telling them they're racist, and it just puts their backs up. It's you know, understanding racism requires trying to explain to people why something is racist. I think they just simply won't attack Pauline Hanson over racism just simply because average voters who might support her feel that they're also being offended.
Nikki, what do you think about that? I mean, racism is this woman's calling card, and race, being a racist, is almost never heard as an accusation against her by politicians other than Greens.
They refuse to even hint at it. I'll just give you one recent example. The other day, the South Australian opposition leader, Ashton Hearn, was on Radio National. Now, the Liberal Party in South Australia is likely to end up, if it's lucky, with 5 or 6 seats in the new parliament. Lucky to end up with that number of seats because of the great threat that is posed by One Nation. And she was asked whether she would preference One Nation last on her ballot paper. And she said no, she wouldn't, because she's put Labour last. Then she was asked, well, how would you feel if One Nation actually became the opposition party in South Australia, which is a real possibility? And her response was that it wouldn't concern her in the slightest. I thought that was a most extraordinary comment. It would be hugely consequential if a party like One Nation was the official opposition in South Australia and the Liberal Party was almost wiped out. You know, there are any number of things she could have said highlighting the dangers that Pauline Hanson posed to the community, to the economy, without, you know, directly accusing her of racism. But she didn't even take the opportunity to do that. And I thought that was a really bad judgment call and a really bad sign of a lack of ticker and a lack of guts to actually take her on. And I've been watching Angus Taylor on this as well. And he has tried to dance around the issue of preferencing. And he has gone nowhere near as hard as Matt Canavan did in attacking her over her comment on Muslims, and then when he assumed the leadership in attacking her for her lack of policies and her lack of ability to deliver anything meaningful for people.
Just for nostalgia's sake, shall we go back to George Brandis after the first burqa incident, after the first time this woman dressed up in a burqa and came in to the Senate? George Brandis had this to say.
A large majority of Australians wish to see the banning of the burqa.
Senator Brandis.
Senator Hanson, no, we will not be banning the burqa. We have about 500 million Australians in this country of the Islamic faith, and the vast majority of them are law-abiding, good Australians. And it, Senator Hanson, it is absolutely consistent with being a good, law-abiding Australian and being a strict, adherent Muslim. And to ridicule that community, to drive it into a corner, to mock its religious garments, is an appalling thing to do. And I would ask you to reflect on what you have done.
Order.
Paul, you don't hear that anymore.
Well, I think that was a very effective response from George Brandis, and it was a response to a particular gesture from Pauline Hanson. I think that was highly appropriate and highly effective. But I want to make the point that attacking Hanson as a racist, confronting her and branding her as a racist, is totally counterproductive. That is not going to work. It's not going to work in political terms. It's not going to work in media terms. It's not going to work in pragmatic terms. I can remember in the old days, 30 years ago, talking to the famous ANOP pollster Rod Cameron, and he said to me then, and it's even truer today, the more Hanson is attacked and the more she's branded a racist, the more support that she will generate. Now, of course, I think that quite a lot of what she says is racism, but it misunderstands the nature of Hanson today in 2026 to think that her main appeal is racism. It isn't. It isn't. The problem is much greater, much more wide-ranging than just racism. I mean, she is seen on the right wing by many people as a cultural heroine. She is seen as a heroine and she's depicted as a heroine, and that's got to be tackled. And this requires a far more sophisticated political approach.
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr, and I am talking to Paul Kelly, editor-at-large of The Australian, and Nikki Sava, author, commentator, about the Pauline Hanson phenomenon at this point. Nikki, there's been a lot of commentary that Pauline Hanson represents those people who want a shake-up of the system. What is it, do you think, that those people are pissed off about? Why do they want the system shaken up?
Well, they see the system is just wrong for them, is not delivering for them. But can I just go back a little bit to why is One Nation now polling in the 20s when only this time last year it was 6 or 8%? And I think that last year there were five events that accelerated support for her. And the first of those was the catastrophic defeat in the election led by Dutton for the coalition. It showed to voters who had supported him that he had no answers for their problems, right? So that started the withdrawal of support in greater numbers for the coalition.
Now, can I throw in a question, Nikki? There was a preference deal too in 2025, wasn't there?
Yes, and she was not preferenced last. In fact, in some seats, she was preferenced. She had been on the rise slowly for a number of elections. Paul Erickson told me in 2022 he was worried about the inroads that she was making in traditional Labor seats. And in 2022, that was around 6%. Then it went to about 8% in 2025. Then, you know, we've had ongoing problems with cost of living and interest rate increases. And that, of course, you know, feeds into people's anxieties. We had Susan Lee's leadership, which was largely ineffectual. She managed to convince Barnaby Joyce to defect. Now, just think about this. Barnaby Joyce is now kind of the respectable face of One Nation, right? So I think that moment accelerated the increase. And then after that, we had the Bondi massacre. And leaders of the major parties did not respond as well as they should have to that terrible event. Pauline Hanson went there to lay flowers at the site, and she was clapped and cheered by people. I watched it on TV and I was really taken aback by that. I thought, well, this is very interesting. And ever since then, she's just gone further and further and further up. So I think all these things have combined to accelerate support for her, and she has gone unchallenged by the major parties in any serious way. But I was also talking today to Michelle Millthorpe, who's running as an independent in Farrah, where One Nation...
That's Susan Lee's old seat.
Susan Lee's old seat. And one poll last week had One Nation in front. So I asked Michelle if she'd noticed that support for One Nation was growing in that area. And quite plainly, it is. And she says, you know, the big issue there is water buybacks, but it's also the lack of funding for aged care, the lack of funding for childcare, the lack of funding for healthcare in regional areas. But then once she says to people, well, you know, Pauline Hanson didn't turn up for 50% of the sittings of the parliament last year, and she doesn't have a policy on water buybacks, you know, and she doesn't do it in an angry way. She tries to explain to people on the ground, face to face, why Pauline is not, or One Nation rather, is not the answer to their problems.
Paul, is part of the attraction of Pauline in, you know, following up what Nikki has said, that she has these kind of extreme policies, which a kind of really sometimes amusing but sometimes deeply pleasing, like just chuck it out, just stop it, just stop the boats, just abolish this, just get rid of that. There was a time back in the 90s when there was a great deal of political confusion around the response to native title, and her policy was just get rid of it. And that's deeply attractive to people, even if it is complete nonsense.
David, I don't think her policies are very important. I mean, people are aware of her policies. Some people might be attracted to her policies, particularly, say, the immigration policy. But as I said earlier on, the whole perception of Hanson has been transformed from 30 years ago. This is now a cultural phenomenon. It has quite deep roots in the Australian community. And I think, just to take up some of the points that Nikki made, the really fundamental point is the collapse of the coalition at the last federal election. And what this meant was the sort of message sent to people on the centre-right was the Liberal and National parties have failed. This is a debacle. You can't trust them. You can't rely on them. You've got to look elsewhere. This was the big message right through the political and cultural system on the right of politics after the last election. So you had that.
Yeah.
The other thing you had is disillusionment with the established system. And this disillusionment is very deep-seated. There's growing resentment and hostility to the major parties. There's a feeling the nation is not working properly, that governments don't work properly anymore. Superimposed on top of that is stagnant living standards. The extraordinary feature of the last election was that despite the fact we had 7 quarters of negative per capita income growth, the Albanese government won convincingly. Well, that 7 quarters of negative per capita income growth has had a profound effect. It's alienated the community. People are hurting, people are resentful, people are impatient, and they are fed up with the political system. So all this feeds into Hanson. Now, I think the other thing that's important is, if you like, the cultural revolution on the right. And this is a revolution against progressive politics. So it's against action on climate change. It's against net zero. It's against wokeism. It's against high levels of immigration. Look at the Scanlon Foundation surveys. They are extraordinary. What they're showing is there is a collapse of support and confidence in Australia. There's a collapse of the sense of confidence in Australian identity. About a third of the community now say they don't believe that a diverse immigration program is in the interests of the country. So you're getting these fundamental changes about Australian identity, about confidence in the country, this concern about lack of patriotism, and then you've got the rise of identity politics coming from the left, and Hanson clearly stands against that. So essentially what you've got is you've got a cultural revolution on the right against progressive politics and against progressive sentiment. And Hanson has tapped all that. Now, look.
Sure, she's riding it. But can I put a question to you, Paul? Is one of the reasons that there is such a level of disillusionment about government in this country is that we've for so long had governments that have done so little, that have talked so much and actually done so little? And here are people with real problems, here are people with real ambitions for the country and real fears, and they just see talk, talk, talk and no action.
Well, look, David, that's exactly correct. And you've given me a quick leeway into my new book, which you were kind enough to say will be coming out in the middle of the year.
And my thinking has always been fundamental to your books, hasn't it, Paul?
You've had a profound influence on me, David, for most of our lifetimes, of course. But one of the points I argue is the last 10 years, and of course it's not just the last 10 years, it's really the last 20 years, has been a time of underperformance by Australian governments. We haven't done as well as we should have done. We haven't done as well as we did during the Hawke, Keating, Howard, Costello period. And this is now having a profound effect on the country in terms of the way people think economically, socially, and culturally. Now, Hanson is tapping into all these frustrations. Now, I was listening to a radio interview. I won't say who did the interview with Hanson, but it was a commercial station. And at the end of the interview, and I might say, Hanson is never interviewed in a professional way. Hanson is always treated as a cultural heroine, someone we're lucky to have in this country, someone who's telling the truth about the state of the country. And at the end of the interviewer said, "We love you, Pauline. We love you, Pauline." Okay, you don't hear people talking about Anthony Albanese or Angus Taylor at the end of the interview saying, "We love you."
And they never said it of Susan Lee.
Of course they never said it about Susan Lee, but this tells you there's this element now unleashed in this country, and it's a very powerful element, and it's tied into all the forces that Nikki and I have just talked about, and it requires a very sophisticated response to combat.
Paul, I do want to correct you. There was a time when Pauline Hanson was brutally questioned by a journalist. Let's listen.
Are you xenophobic? Please explain.
Xenophobia means a fear of all things foreign.
No, I don't think I am. No, I'm not. Is there a problem?
There was a time, Paul, when that kind of thing was done. And
but it took a long time. Can I say also it took a long time to get to that point? Before that interview, she got a dream run in the media. It didn't matter what she said, what she did. There were no questions asked, no criticism levelled, you know, nothing to suggest that it was anything other than, you know, a celebrity, a kind of a celebrity, you know, making all these intriguing statements that were never questioned. It was only after that interview that people started. And the same thing is happening again now. She's not put under any serious questioning, really, by the media. She doesn't subject herself to the same kind of questioning by the media. So she gets away with a hell of a lot.
Back in those days, of course, the real damage was done by Pauline Pansdown.
I don't like it. No, I don't. Never did. I don't like it. I don't like anything.
I think of the value of what I did or the actual effect of what I did based on what people who were affected by her told me at the time and have told me since, you know. And the sense I got from Aboriginal friends and Asian friends who talked to me was that what I did gave them a conduit to sort of get back at her, to be able to laugh at her, gave them a feeling of empowerment when they had felt sort of powerless before, to be able to sort of have any sort of, or in their own mind, form of platform upon which to challenge her in some ways. And so it was the satirical construct, which, you know, I very much made around. I always thought that she was a very artificial person. You know, she sort of, the more and more I sort of researched and found out about her, she wasn't what she said she was at all. You know, now she's, people think it's a big change. She's being flown around to Mar-a-Lago on Gina's jet, but that's what she's always been. You know, she's out for herself. She has blinkers on that doesn't see beyond her own immediate instincts and desires. And that's what she's always been. You know, I thought she was a series of media sound bites. So I constructed myself out of a series of media sound bites in a way. She once referred to me as an absolute idiot rat bag, which when you look at somebody saying that, I mean, it was funny, it made me laugh when I heard it, but a rat bag was sort of the sense of like, you're not a serious person, you know, that I wasn't a serious person, when she wasn't either, you know. And so to me, it was facing the construction with the construction. The idea of Pauline Hanson does not extend beyond Pauline Hanson herself.
I don't care. I don't like it. I don't like anything. No, the whole thing is wrong and it stinks and I don't like it.
That's Simon Hunt, wildly famous at the time as the drag queen Pauline Pansdown. She's actually strangely invulnerable to mockery. The strange thing, do you remember when she wrote that the world was facing the possibility of being run by a lesbian robot called Poona Lee Hong.
Yes.
She survived
and
that.
And the video. And the video that she made where she said, if you're watching this video, I'm dead.
Do you think there's an appetite? Do you think, Nikki, there is an appetite for us to hear that?
Yes.
Oh, I think there is too.
Fellow Australians, if you are seeing me now, it means I have been murdered. Do not let my passing distract you for even a moment.
This is a woman with no sense of humour, who is thin-skinned. I mean, she sued to get Pauline Pansdown to take off one of her songs, the famous I'm a Backdoor Man from the Ku Klux Klan. That was injuncted by the courts. She survives all of this, and as Paul says, without real scrutiny from the press. Why hasn't she been on Insiders?
She did do an Insiders episode with Barry Cassidy a few years ago, and she got into quite a lot of bother over vaccinations. She was then, you know,
she was anti-vaxxing, was she?
Yeah, the anti-vaxxer vote. And so that was the one and only appearance. And, you know, if you go back and look, there are no interviews really with serious mainstream journalists. She, well, like most of them these days, she picks and chooses, you know, who she appears with and where she appears. So it's all really carefully curated. She's got very clever social media. She's got James Ashby making all these movies about her, you know, for social media. But she's never been able to self-parody, you know, to make fun of herself. She never does that. And when she speaks, the way that she speaks and what she says, people think, yeah, that's right, that's how I feel. So she is speaking for a lot of people out there. That's what we mustn't forget, that there are a lot of people who think and feel the same way she does. Now, she does it for political gain and gains of another nature. I mean, it's been revealed how often she flies around on Gina Reinhart's jet and all that. Now that she has taken off to this point, I think it's going to be very difficult to get her back down. And I keep saying to people, I'm waiting for the day when her vote exceeds Labor's vote. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if that happened. And unless Albanese seizes the national debate and unless he and Chalmers bring down a budget that really addresses people's problems, I mean, in a substantive way, with substantial reform, a big bang budget, then I think we're just going to see that vote for One Nation accelerate and the major parties facing real threats.
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr and I'm speaking to Paul Kelly, Nikki Sava, about Pauline Hanson. Paul, there has been a way that she's been brought down in the past. And we tend to forget that in the 1998 Queensland elections, she had 22% following. I mean, the numbers were as big then as they are now. But whenever she has elected a cohort of people to state parliaments or to the federal parliament, they desert her. Why? And can she be taken seriously if she can't actually hold her people together? Here's a little grab from Anthony Green on exactly this point.
There's never been a party like One Nation in terms of its inability to keep its members within the party. Three quarters of One Nation members have quickly departed. Some of them in high profile. Mark Latham was sacked. They've lost, One Nation's lost all their current upper house membership in New South Wales. The first 11 MPs elected in Queensland are all gone by the next election. Numerous One Nation MPs once elected have fallen out with Hanson or whoever her current party guru is and departed. And that's been a consistent pattern. They have sometimes had some very good candidates. Their candidate in Farah, David Farley, is an agribusinessman, expert on irrigation issues. It looks like a well-qualified candidate, as have some of their ones in the past, and they've always ended up leaving the party. I won't say Mr. Farley will or not, but there have been that consistent pattern in the past.
Paul, why is this? Has she learnt? Is it the inevitable outcome if she gets a swag of seats in South Australia or indeed a swag of seats at the next federal election?
Hanson quintessentially is a solo operator. She is not a team leader. She is not a party leader. She's never been able to hold a party together. And the reason for this, I think, is she appeals to different people on the basis of grievance. And those different grievances make up One Nation. But One Nation really lacks a coherent, cohesive ideological core. One Nation and Hanson is very different to Nigel Farage in the UK or Donald Trump in America. Hanson, in that sense, is not nearly as formidable, and the threat she poses is not nearly as great as the threat posed by Donald Trump and Nigel Farage. But the point I want to make, and I think this is really critical, there is a massive con job at work here, and the fascinating thing is that Hanson has been supported on the right. She's been supported by a number of prominent figures on the right, by a number of right-wing celebrities. She's been supported by a lot of right-wing social media and mainstream right-wing media as well. Now, all these people loathe the Albanese government. They loathe the Albanese government. When you talk to people, they actually think that supporting Hanson is the way to defeat Albanese. This is completely incorrect. What's happening is that the surge of support for Hanson has undermined the coalition, has undermined the Liberal and National parties, undermined the centre-right of politics. And in this sense, Hanson represents an enormous threat and danger and vote-stealing mechanism from the coalition. What this means at the end of the day is, at the present time, Hanson is helping the Albanese government. She's weakening the coalition and she's strengthening Labor. She's strengthening the Albanese government vis-a-vis the coalition. And the extraordinary thing about this is that this is coming from support within the right. So essentially what you've got is you've got the right wing, the centre-right of politics, to a large extent, is blowing out its brains because it's divided about how to deal with Albanese. And the number of people I speak to, I say to them, why on earth are you supporting Pauline Hanson? And they say, the reason I'm supporting Pauline Hanson is because at the end of the day, I want to defeat Anthony Albanese. It's totally crazy.
There is, I mean, wonderful figures. You mentioned the Scanlon report in Social Cohesion, of which I'm a huge fan. And there's some wonderful stuff in the most recent report, which looks at the parties that One Nation voters feel most warmly towards. And that party is the National Party. So, you know, they don't feel warmly towards Labor, and that's reciprocated. Surely, Nikki, people can read those figures and understand what Paul was saying, is that support Pauline and you are actually undermining the coalition.
Well, of course. I mean, One Nation is out to kill the National Party and the Liberal Party, and they are sitting there and allowing it to happen. I mean, this is the thing that astounds me, that it is happening before their eyes and they are sitting there and allowing it to happen. And I think it's also worth pointing out that one of the key differences between now and back in 1998 when she was such a force is that the major parties polled in the 40s with their primary vote. That hasn't happened for a very long time. And Labor is now down around 30%, maybe even 29%. The Libs, you know, are down in the teens. So, you know, I've been trying to think in my own mind, well, what will happen if One Nation does win lower house seats? Well, firstly, it says that there is something really wrong with the way things are going and the way Australians are thinking. In some ways, you can't blame them because they do feel as if they've been let down and no one's listening to them except for her, and she's saying exactly what they think. But will One Nation dissolve this time like it has previous times? Well, I don't know that they will. I think they've probably got a better structure now, and she's probably got people around her, unlike Pasquarelli and those types who were there back in 1998, who were smarter gurus. And shrewder. Yeah, the original Svengalis. So I don't know. Look, I just think everything really is so volatile, so unpredictable, thank you, Donald Trump, that it is really difficult to predict exactly what will happen.
Paul, who's paying for it all? Where's the money coming from?
Well, I would imagine that she's getting quite a lot of financial support from strategic people around the country. I don't know the answer to the question, but I think it does need to be investigated. It does need to be looked at. And essentially what we see here, again, very significant figures on the centre-right of politics committing to Hanson. Just as we've seen in America and in Britain, significant figures being attracted to Trump and to Nigel Farage. Now, as I've said earlier, I don't think Hanson is in their category. I don't think Hanson represents the sort of threat in Australia that they do in their respective countries. While I recognise the situation is unpredictable and very volatile, I think that if we look at the history of One Nation, the history of One Nation shows that it gyrates up and down very, very quickly. I find it very hard to believe that One Nation will maintain the current degree of primary voting support that it has. I recognise Hanson is better organised than she's been in the past, and I recognise that the electorate is disillusioned with the major system. So these are important structural changes. But I think it is simply very difficult to believe that Hanson, given who she is and what she represents, will be able to maintain such a large degree of support in this community. I think it's unlikely to happen.
Nikki, what's in it for Gina Rinehart to be flying Pauline Hanson around, even to take her to do's at Mar-a-Lago?
Well, maybe it's because they're very like-minded people. Gina has grown disillusioned with the Liberal Party. She was, of course, great mates with Barnaby. Well, he's jumped ship to Pauline, so has Gina. So that was part of the drift that Paul was talking about before. All these high-profile people who have shifted, who have given up hope, basically, in the Liberal Party and the National Party. You know, they've just written them off. They don't see how they can regain government or be a credible alternative government in, you know, the next decade or so. Obviously, it's very fraught for the Liberal and National parties, and Hanson is ascendant and will be, I think, for quite a time. I don't see how in the short, medium, or even long term, they're going to take her down. One proposition that was put to me when I was writing Earthquake by a senior National was that there could come a time where One Nation, the National Party, and the right wing of the Liberal Party could unite and form a party like Reform in the UK, but it wouldn't be Pauline Hanson leading it. It would have to be someone else. And, well, that someone else I thought of was possibly Andrew Hastie. But someone like that, it needs someone who is articulate and has a bit of substance to them. And a party like that, I think, in this environment would really take off.
But, Paul, There have been attempts at reshaping the parties out on the right before. They tend to come to nothing. Maybe promising, but, you know, it all falls away.
Well, this is the point of maximum crisis, certainly in the political lifetime of the three of us. There's no doubt that the coalition faces an existential crisis. Talking now about the Liberal Party and the National Party. And so you've got to start thinking about the possibility and option of restructuring on the right. Now, my view about this at the moment is this is most unlikely to happen, because I do think, despite all their difficulties and all their problems, that there is nonetheless a very still strong sense of identity within the National Party and within the Liberal Party, given the internal divisions. I think that this sense of a collective strong identity still exists in those two parties. So I don't think anyone like Andrew Hastie is going to be leaving the Liberal Party. We see both the progressive wing of the Liberal Party, the conservative wing of the Liberal Party. We have leadership changes from one to the other. I think at the end of the day, there is a feeling that the idea of restructuring the centre-right is simply too difficult. The other point to make is that most of the people in the Liberal and National Party don't like Hanson. They don't trust Hanson. And while they're worried about a policies, they don't believe in a policies either. I mean, I think this is a pretty important point. You look at what Matt Canavan is doing. I think Canavan's quite interesting. He's got a very down-to-earth, practical way of managing Hanson, and he might be more successful in undermining Hanson than we've seen from other people for some time.
Let's listen to what Pauline Hanson thinks of the coalition. This was her in November last year.
You know, One Nation, we've been setting the agenda for many years now, to do with mass migration, to do with, you know, climate change, with The Voice. Everything that we've set in place, the coalition have followed our lead on this. So this is just another one. The coalition doesn't know where they are. They're not even in sync with their own counterparts in the states, because the states are glued to net zero. So what is the federal going to do about it when the states don't follow their lead? They are in such disarray.
Well, what about that, Nikki? I mean, that's fabulous. That's what we call a spray.
And it was pretty close to the mark also. I mean, it was pretty accurate description of what is happening and what has been happening. And, you know, Dutton adopted the language on immigration and the intent, and then embarked on culture wars over, you know, Indigenous folk. And, you know, they ran a very, very tough campaign on The Voice and succeeded. So, yes, she has in many ways set the agenda, and the coalition has followed it. And has that helped the coalition? Not one little bit. The Liberal Party does not have an identity at the moment. Nobody knows what the Liberal Party stands for at the moment. All we've had from Taylor are these two slogans, one of which I can't remember, but it's, you know, protecting our way of life and fixing the economy, whatever, without any solutions, practical solutions being offered. So I do think that it was a big mistake on their part to reunite with the National Party so quickly. I think the Liberals needed time on their own to sort out who they are and what they stand for and which people they're trying to win back. Are they trying to get back into the cities and suburbs, or do they want to be a regional outer suburban based seat? I mean, we don't know. We have no idea. And they don't have any idea. And they should have had time out to think about this and really think carefully about this. And then it would have been possible at some point to reunite later, closer to the election. I mean, it's happened before. So, yeah, I think it's just internal chaos inside the coalition.
And Paul, do you have any confidence that these, you know, polling figures for Pauline are actually going to be reflected by votes at the end. I mean, people are now saying we're a long way away from a federal election. There are these astonishing federal support for Pauline. But do you think in the end anybody, you know, are 24% people going to give their first vote to Pauline Hanson?
I think the vote will erode over time. I don't believe that at the next federal election, Hanson's going to be polling 25% of the primary vote. I could be wrong, but I don't think that. Look, the problem with the Liberal Party was it was put on notice when it lost the 2022 election under Scott Morrison. This was the most important defeat in the party's history since Menzies established the party, okay? What it had to do then was it had to take this defeat on board. It had to think through the question of belief and identity. What did it really stand for? What was its core belief? What was its core identity? It dodged that debate. It didn't want to have that debate. It thought the Albanese government was getting into diabolical trouble, and it thought it could skate through to a good result at the 2025 election. It got that badly wrong, and it ended up being in an even worse position. I think there's now a recognition in both the Liberal and National parties that they've got to go back to the fundamentals. I mean, we've got the leader of the party, Angus Taylor, saying it's a question of survival. The issue now is whether the Liberal Party will survive as a force or not. And I think that's widely recognised throughout the party. The question is, what does it do about it? Well, having recognised the problem, I think they can now begin the very, very difficult task of sorting out what they stand for and what they believe in. It's going to take them a while to do it. There's going to be a lot of pain, a lot of hardship, a lot of interruptions along the path. The party needs to stay united. If we have another internal leadership crisis, then that is going to be almost the kiss of death. Whether the party has got the talent, the ability to have this debate, to conduct this resurgence, we'll have to see. But I think at the end of the day, what they've got to focus on is their mission is to be a governing party. That means you don't just appeal to one section of the Australian community. You don't just appeal to urban Australia or to regional Australia. You've got to make an appeal to the broader Australian community as a governing party. That's how they've got to think.
And Nikki, there is Pauline Hanson, an apparent redhead, standing on the rocks, singing like siren, to bring the Liberal and National Party boats smashing onto those rocks. Is that a nice Late Night Live way of bringing this conversation to a close? You know, classical references?
Yeah, it's beautiful and it's very you, David. The thing is, they haven't got much time. They've got 2 years, less than 2 years, to sort it out, and they haven't really started. So time is not on their side. I mean, those boats are hitting the rocks as we speak, I think.
Nikki, thank you so much for joining us on Late Night Live.
Pleasure.
I have been talking Pauline with Nikki Savva, journalist, author. Her latest book is, and it's fabulous, ladies and gentlemen, Earthquake, the Election That Shook Australia. And with Paul Kelly, an old colleague of mine from the early days, even before Pauline Hanson, who is editor-at-large at The Australian, and his new book, with a very grand title, talk about Siren on the Rocks, The Twilight of Exceptionalism, the Liberal and Conservative Era, 2013 to 2022, with contributions from Anthony Green, election analyst, and Pauline Pansdown. And that's the show. On our next, Understanding America's Love of Guns is actually a deep Christian obligation. And we're looking at new scandals around the most popular weed killer in the world, Roundup.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.